All right, we are live, everyone. Welcome to Locker Room Access Podcast, a special edition today. Going to be going over the 2025 UVA football team and their season. With that, I'll introduce everybody. You guys probably know me. My name's Josh. Been doing this for a couple years now. We've got guest Dragon with us from the forums for anybody that's there checking it out, our resident gambling expert.
Thank you. Too kind, but glad to be here. It's always fun to kick off a new year.
And then also tonight, very special guest for us. We've got Jackie Franchulli with us from Wahoo's 24/7.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here and excited for football to be back, honestly.
Amen to that.
Yes, exactly. This is going to be a great weekend. I mean, there's a lot of really big games along with Virginia's game, honestly, in a pretty good time slot for anybody that's wanting to watch all the games. So it kind of works out well for everybody.
Yeah, for sure. I do like the 6 p.m. kickoff where it's not too late, but you don't have to wake up early. So I do appreciate the 6 p.m. tip.
I do too. Yeah, it's
Yeah,
great.
that's a sweet spot. Like I either the 3 o'clock game and a 6 o'clock game is always my preferred window for Virginia football, just for that reason.
Yeah, for sure. Especially in the early part of the season like this. Like I honestly prefer the 6 maybe a little bit more just because it's not as hot in the stadium. But anyway, it's a good time. It's a good time. Everybody's excited. We're all thrilled. We have football on for what, 4 days straight coming up. Like it's going to be great for everybody.
For sure.
So with that, we'll dive right into it, jump straight into what people are here for, the Virginia football team this year. I'm sure everybody's probably pretty aware at this point that the depth chart Two Deep was released yesterday. Dragon, what do you think? You have a good chance to look at it. What do you think so far?
I want to borrow something that I saw from Jackie, actually, and what she put out yesterday, kind of in her analysis of it, and that's definitely the or. I thought that we would have a little bit more kind of nailed down direction, and not to say that there's a lot of, I'm not sure how to interpret it basically, if it's that we are truly deep and I like having the flexibility, but also I was surprised by that, by some of them and just the amount of them more than anything else. That said, I like this depth chart. My first instinct was I like the fact that we're pretty old. We have a lot of experience, but I felt like I have not said about a Virginia team in several seasons. And I like the fact that it's seemingly, again, on paper, even when there's like this person or that person, I'm like, oh, I'm actually not dreading the other option or whoever that other option. I'm like, these are both opposite sides of the same coin. I understand why they made those decisions. And that's something we can live with. I think, you know, this makes it a little bit more versatile, a little bit more situational, which again is a flexibility that, I mean, I don't know that we've had for several years, and at least definitely not in the last 3 or 4 under this regime, maybe even going back, you know, 4 or 5 years now. There are 5 or 6 years at this point.
Yeah, for sure. And even with that, you know, truthfully, like just looking at the two deep itself on paper, all those names to me are good playable options, like you said. And that's not even getting to, you know, more than a couple guys that'll be coming back from injury relatively soon, which we'll get to a little later.
Yeah,
So,
that's a
yeah.
great call too. Like the injuries are something that I keep kind of forgetting that they're there and I haven't really taken them into account yet. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what this team looks like come NC State, come Florida State in 3 to 4 weeks when everyone starts to kind of get some reps under their belt and everyone kind of gets healthy and gets back live, because then that two deep's going to be really, I think there's going to be some interesting decisions to make.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. Jackie, we'll flip it over to you. What do you think? Maybe some surprises or breakouts that maybe, I mean, you're a little more plugged in, obviously, than we are. Some things maybe you didn't see coming or were a little surprised by.
Yeah, so I was expecting some ors, just because of what we were hearing about position battles. I actually was kind of shocked that the or wasn't there for Donovan Platt and Jordan Robinson. That was the one, although in Tony Elliott's press conference, he kind of mentioned an or, additional or, when he said that he expects those two and Emmanuel Parmalee to all kind of feature in the game, saying that Donovan Platt can kind of go back and forth between both sides. Honestly, most things were kind of expected, especially that, you know, first team O-line kind of is very expected. The first team D-line, very expected. I think the one guy, Daniel Ricker, kind of moved up his stock a lot during fall camp. That's someone that I thought would be in the 2D possibility, but he is in the or of Mitchell Melton. So that means he rose his stock tremendously over fall camp. And we heard a little bit from like Chandler Morris and even Drake Metcalf when I talked to him. We heard what Rickard was impressing. So it was a little surprising how much he impressed. I think he was probably one of the most quiet transfer additions out of the group of the edge rushers. I think he kind of came in and he wasn't talked nearly as much. He looks like a linebacker, but he plays really very physical. He's really good shredding off blocks. So that's something that the staff really liked. I think the two deep in the O-line was the first team expected, but the second team, I think when you look at some of the guys who are rotational players, like you don't see Tashawn Wyatt, the JMU transfer that probably many expected him to be there, but because he's coming working back from an injury, he's probably in the three deep right now. And he's a guy who's kind of rotated in at right tackle. Wallace Unumba starting, that's kind of what we figured at right tackle after he kind of got assimilated and used to the practices. So everyone else in the O-line, we heard about Ben York and how much he's improved. And you know, with Wallabaugh, the transfer from Syracuse also recovering from injury, you kind of like, yeah, okay, we can see where some of these guys are kind of coming in. Harrison Whaley seems to have done enough to move over Noah Vaughn. That was an interesting position battle that we were monitoring at running back. I think this is the first time in a while where you can talk about having three running backs, possibly four as options, which is great if you're trying to keep Xavier Brown healthy and use him to his fullest ability. So that was something that stood out. But honestly, everything else, the only thing that really stood out is that depth at D-line. Like if you look at that, you can see that this is the first time where John Rudzinski is going to be able to rotate those guys as much as he wants, get those reps down to 30. And I really love the fact that they have Jacob Holmes there, because that's a guy that could do, you know, coming in for passing downs or third downs. That's a guy that could get to the quarterback. And that was someone that I thought was underrated too, when you look at that D-line haul from the portal. So a lot of expected things in there. I'm curious to see how the second week depth chart looks, because from what Tony Elliott said, it seems like a lot of guys are going to play on Saturday, and there's probably more oars when it comes to Tony Elliott's mind than actually is on paper.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just looking at the two deep, I mean, just starting like on the offensive line, right? Like almost every position you look at and you're like, okay, well, if something were to happen that this second string guy had to go in, you feel pretty good about it, really. I mean, this team looks miles ahead of where they've been the last couple of years, to be completely honest. I mean, in my opinion.
I mean, I'm still scarred from the North Carolina game last year when we had Brian Stevens and Ty Furnish out. And then you're thinking, well, who's going to play center? Because, and then you had to move guys around. So that should not be a problem this year, because you have options. Even at center, you have, obviously you have Noah Hartzell, but you also have Drake Metcalf, who's played center before, who's taken reps there. You have Noah Josey, obviously, that has taken reps because of all the stuff that happened last year. So you have options there. Even Grant Ellinger, which is not, he's not in the two deep. He's also got reps at center. So they have options now, which is something that I've been back on the beat since 2021. I have not been able to say since I've been back on the beat.
Yeah, for sure. I think just real quick, just going through the idea of a breakout or a surprise. To me, I'm kind of with you on Platt. I just assumed that he was going to be a for sure starter, which not saying he wouldn't play, of course, you know, not being at the top of the list. But like you said, with listening to Elliott yesterday, if you guys haven't heard it, it's a good listen to go in and check out his presser yesterday. Being able to play him, you know, positionally either side of the field should be a pretty good strength. And it really helps, too, that we can rotate like that to keep guys fresh. With a breakout, not that I'm surprised, because obviously Antonio Clary is not there, but I feel pretty good about Ethan Minter going into the season. I think he would be the guy that I would peg as the kind of you didn't expect it breakout, if that makes sense. Like, I mean, I think it's too easy to say maybe Trell Harris on the other side of the ball or Cam Ross, because we've heard so much about his breakouts, because we haven't really got to see them do it yet. But I think Minter's going to be a guy that surprisingly stays in a rotational capacity once everybody's back to health.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Elliott said that he's had a few picks this practice. I know they had no turnovers in the scrimmages, but he's been had his hands around balls for the rest of the practices. I mean, he has picks. He's had pass breakups, and a lot of the other safeties, Devin Neal, for one, has said that he's been so impressed with that freshman. And I mean, think about it. Like last year, it was his first year playing safety. I mean, the kid was playing quarterback in high school. And then never played the position. Then he was playing last year because of Antonio Clary's injury. and he's made himself a really good safety. I mean, he's still young, he's still learning, still adjusting to the position, but I mean, he's earned some playing time. It'll be interesting to see how him and Christian Charles kind of rotate there. I imagine Christian Charles will be kind of like the versatile player. Coach Cox during one of the media availabilities was mentioning he could play corner, he can play safety, he can play spur. So it'll be interesting to see how they use Christian Charles, and in that way, how they use Ethan Minter and Antonio Clair when he eventually gets back.
For sure. So just for everybody watching at home, part of this show, we are going to, towards the end, open it up for some questions. If anybody has anything, feel free to throw them out there. If we have any, of course, we'll fill them in. To get us started with this, I did take some questions from our Locker Room Access forums. If you guys aren't a part of it, it's a great place to be. Come check it out. But one of the main questions I got, and Jackie, I'm going to kind of let you run with this maybe a little bit more, is a general overall, like with this team. So, I mean, they have brought in so many transfers. What's the official number? I think it's like 53. Is that correct?
It's 53 newcomers. So that's high school and transfers. So it's about 33 transfers.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So with that, obviously a lot of these guys they brought in are on the 2 deep. They brought in a ton of older, experienced guys, which generally does mean good things. But as a casual fan, you're kind of like, wait a minute, who are these guys I've never heard of? So, you know, if you haven't been following as closely, you know, you're excited because the leaves are about to change. It's football season. We're all excited, you know, and you're tuning in for the first time. We're going to do a quick run through, just kind of going over some position groups where some of the new faces are going to be. Just to get everybody up to speed on who some of these guys are. So, Jackie, if it's okay, I'd like to start the offensive line. If you just want to do a quick run through, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. So the O-line, well, first off, you got familiarity there, right? Because you got Mikhail Boley and Noah Josie on the left side. But then at center, you have Brady Wilson, which is a guy from UAB. He's coming with experience. It's great that they found him because they were going to miss Brian Stevens. I mean, I mentioned him a little bit ago. He was a guy that anchored that offense, right? When he was hurt, they didn't play well. They really missed him. And having Brady Wilson there, who's a little bit taller, a little bit more physical, I think he's a great improvement for that O-line. Very talented and has been quick to be that veteran guy on there. One thing that is kind of neat with this new college football landscape is actually I did a story on Brady Wilson because he went through the transfer portal process with his wife, which is very different when I'm dealing with high school recruiting now, right? And college, like, I don't know how many times I actually had to, you know, talk to the wife and see how she handled the recruiting process. And that maturity is what is in that locker room. Brady Wilson is just one of several guys who are either married or engaged right now and going to the next step of their lives, which changes the dynamic in the locker room where usually you think 17-year-olds. So you have Brady Wilson there. Drake Metcalf isn't really a new face, but technically he is because he hurt his Achilles last spring and never really featured. He was a transfer addition last year. He played with Terry Heffernan when they were both were at Stanford before Drake went up to UCF. So he's kind of like a new addition, right? Just because of the injury. So he's at right guard right now. And then the other additional transfer that came in with him in that class, Ethan Sipe, who hurt his foot last year. He's also a guy to know at right guard. And then Wallace Unamba is there at right tackle. And what's interesting about him was if you follow the transfer portal drama, he came to visit Virginia in December, ended up committing to Virginia on his visit, then visited Kentucky, then ultimately ended up transferring to Kentucky, entered in the portal in the spring again, and then transferred to Virginia. He's a really good addition because he did not allow a sack at all last year at his previous stop of New Mexico. So he is a guy who's done a really good job of protecting the quarterback, which I know Virginia fans will be very excited about. So those are the guys that are your starters. Then the other guys to know are Kevin Wingington, who was a transfer with Big Ten experience. He's behind Noah Josie at left guard. And those are kind of the new faces right now because McKeelan Thomas and Monroe Mills both are hurt. McKeelan Thomas doesn't have a timeline for when he's coming back, but if he comes back, it'll probably be middle of the season. I think it's even further down the line than Cam Robinson at this time. So those are kind of like the names to know on the O-line.
Yeah, for sure. I've got a few stats I'm going to throw in. But before I get to that, Dragon, I know you're a big offensive line guy. So tell me, what do you think from what you're hearing, what you've researched a little bit so far yourself?
Yeah, I love kind of what we're we're putting together. This is the most excited I've been about offensive line in Virginia in a while. I know I keep saying that about a lot of positions on this program, but it's just, it's hard not to be. There's a lot of new blood. There's a lot of guys who've had some success in previous destinations. And I didn't realize that what you just talked about, Jackie, about Wilson and just where he is in his life, that maturity level, I think it's just for an offensive lineman, especially in the middle of that, who's got to be able to read and make decisions and be a leader, most importantly, of that group. That's massive. And that's something that we haven't had. I mean, we've watched Josie grow up in front of us basically for, you know, over the last few years. And if we watched so many of these guys have to come of age, and we watched a lot of guys who they sank, some of the guys swam, and it's great, but O-line's not a place to learn on the job. It's really difficult. I don't care. You know, there's dozens of five-star recruits every year who come out and end up going to Obama or a place like that, and they don't make the roster. It's not because they're not good. It's just it takes a long time to understand what defenses are doing, understand how to read and react to the physicality of the game and the speed of the game. And so to know that we've gotten a little bit bigger, we've gotten a lot more experience, I'm excited about that. I think if we can find a way to actually control the line of scrimmage and stay on track as they're going forward and really, you know, 2-3 yards in first, 2-3 yards in second, set up some more manageable second and third down situations. It's just changes in the game plan completely for the Hoos this year. And it's something we haven't seen from them in a while. So I like that. I love hearing the guys have just stepped right into that role of leadership and just really kind of taken ownership of that group. I mean, linemen are a special type where they're like their own little unique family. They need to work together. They need to understand each other as a unit and really know what makes everyone tick. And when you don't have that, especially, you know, if you don't have that, it's just hard to plug and play. So hearing that that's coming together so quickly is a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, 100%. Dragon, you brought up a good point too, kind of towards the beginning there, about having an older, experienced guy who's had some life experience too on top of that, being in the middle. So, you know, a lot of times your center is one of your key parts, not just because, you know, obviously he touches the ball every play, but because a lot of times teams rely on their centers to call out defenses, to recognize, exactly, to pick up signals, and to call it out. So especially for a group that, I mean, just in my opinion here, that is so many new faces mixed in, no matter who's on the field, to have that kind of steady leadership along with a steady leadership quarterback in Chandler Morris is going to be great, I think. I mean, if you have to put a team together this way to where it's all new guys, not new to football, but new to being together as a unit, you want that type of experience leading the way.
100%. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, having that in that position, like you said, I think that's so critical. And having someone who understands how to get groups of people together and get them onto the same page, I want to make up, and without knowing him, but I imagine typically someone like that's more willing to say, hey, come out with me after practice. Come over to the house. Let's hang out. Let's have some all that little stuff makes such a difference, especially on the O-line. And it's just having someone who's mature enough to understand that is critical. And it's tough to do when you're 17, 18 and still trying to figure out what is it like to live away from your mom and dad. But if you're married and have some experience, you've been around the country a little bit, it's a lot easier to kind of be like, oh, it's okay. Let me pull this guy in. Let me take him under my wing. We don't have to sit here and read the playbook every night together, but come over to the house and have dinner. That's a little thing, but it goes and translates on the field.
Yeah, for sure. Some quick stats to kind of go along with this too, just while we wrap up the offensive line. So as Jackie mentioned, Wallace Unamba, but then also Brady Wilson, neither of them allowed a sack last season. Brady actually comes in pretty high regarded too. I think PFF has him graded, well, for last season as the fourth best center in college football last year. Mm-hmm. So very, very high, you know, regard there. Then interesting thing for the right side of the line, which is where the two new to us faces are, Metcalf and then Unamba, both will be starting. I did a little bit of research just kind of reading through their profiles and some info, and I thought it was interesting to read that both players at their last stop. So, of course, Metcalf missed last year with the injury before season. I think it was in spring practice when it happened. Mm-hmm. But so 2023 for him, and then for Unamba last season at New Mexico, both of their offenses each year ranked fourth nationally in rushing as far as yards per game goes. So to me, that kind of sets too with a lot of, you know, I mean, we've heard a lot from mostly Elliot, you know, when we see Dez speak, he kind of hits on it too, that they would like to be able to run the ball more. Establishing the run was a big thing from them for, you know, from day one coming here. It's one of the first things Elliot talked about as far as on the field went. So just, you know, seeing them actually take shape and getting guys that come from what were very elite level systems as far as that aspect of the game goes, it's a good sign to me, you know, as a fan and watching the team, seeing that type of thing going into motion. Obviously, it's got to play out on the field, but I mean, them taking those steps, what feels like the right way, is a good sign, I think.
No, for sure. I mean, they knew they needed to go and reinforce that O-line to help with their run game. And this is definitely kind of like the first step there. And then they, you know, I guess we're going to talk about the running backs too, but I mean, that's the kind of next step, is that they needed to add depth in that position to help with Xavier Brown. I mean, those are kind of the two pieces that they needed.
100%. Those upgrades had to happen. And yeah, to have that sort of power on the right side, which is typically where you're going to attack from on the run game, that's massive. And then, like you said, Jack, that's a perfect segue into the backfield, the depth. I'm really excited about that. Just having those options and to be able to have some different looks, but also just have quality there, because that's, especially in the early part of the season, when you need to rotate guys in and out of the backfield because they're not quite in game shape yet. And it's hot depending on where you are in the South in September. So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That, like you guys said, it's a great segue into where we were going next with the running backs. Obviously, you know, most people that have seen the team know Xavier Brown, but, you know, again, running back's a position where they do rotate, obviously, but some people might find it interesting to know it's actually a newcomer who was listed atop the two deep for this position. So Jackie, you want to give us a little info?
Yeah. Jamari Taylor. I've been excited for him since he visited Virginia back in December. He came in, I think I could talk a lot about his numbers and a lot about his stats, but I think one stat that Virginia fans would be excited about has that he has not missed a game in his college career, because he has been steady. He has been consistent. He has been healthy. I think that is something where I think UVA fans will be like, that is the best stat you could tell me about a running back, about any player in a Virginia uniform. So knock on wood there for Jamari Taylor. But he's been, I mean, since his arrival, I've heard from several people around the program saying he's one of their best defensive players. I mean, Cam Ross has been kind of the other guy that's kind of come up a little bit in fall camp, but overwhelmingly, Jamari Taylor has been the guy that Virginia has been really excited about. I mean, Keith Gaither will come in straight up and tell you he's going to be the best running back in the ACC. So, I mean, there's a lot of excitement around for him because he's just that consistent runner that you want. He's a guy who will put his head down and will get you the yards that you need. He'll run behind his blockers. All the O-line says they love protecting him because they know he'll be able to get a good chunk of yards. And he's just a good combination for Xavier Brown, who's such a different type of running back and different potential for that offense, where you can kind of be a little bit more creative with Xavier Brown a little bit, maybe add him to the passing game. We saw what his capabilities were last year when he was healthy. But having a guy like Jamari Taylor there, then Xavier Brown kind of intertwine and try to figure out how to give him a ball, because then good things happen when he has the ball. And then you have two other options between Harrison Whaley and Noah Vaughn. So if you're Virginia, you're really ecstatic that you have four options. Probably going to be more Jamari Taylor and Xavier Brown, with maybe Harrison Whaley coming down in those third or fourth down options. But still, I mean, you've got a lot of options there. And I think Virginia did a good decision by bringing in Whaley as well. He's one that's been quietly coming up during training camp. I think Noah Vaughn was the one that we talked a little bit more about because he was getting those 13 reps, but Whaley was coming back from an injury from last year. So he was gradually getting conditioning ready, and talking to people at Virginia, they're like, Whaley's going to play. He's going to be a guy that you should know about too. He's going to get reps. He's going to get snaps. So, I mean, if I'm a fan, I'm thinking, wow, you just named four players that could run the ball. This could be a good year.
I like Whaley. I really do. It makes me super happy to hear you kind of echo that sentiment. But just from just what little bits seen of him, what little bits I've kind of gleaned from people, I think there's something special there that we just haven't quite unearthed yet all the way. But I just, yeah. And I love the fact that he's got a chance to kind of grow into it as well a little bit and doesn't have to just be out there for 15, 20 carries a game and trying to figure it out. And so, yeah, I don't know. I just, he's kind of my favorite guy in that, out of that foursome of just, I love them all, but I'm just kind of have a little special, you know, my antenna goes up if he, you know, if he can get some snaps, just kind of see what happens, how does it look for him, and just what can he do? I for some reason, something about him, I just really think he's got something in there.
Yeah, for sure. Certainly a exciting position group this year, especially with the offensive line. Not to double back, but man, it's just exciting to think, like, not only do we have good backs, we have a solid line, like, they could really start to show something. We'll switch to there. We'll go to our other skill position, and we'll throw the tight ends with the wide receivers, if that's okay.
Sounds good.
Go ahead, Jackie.
Oh, yeah. So tight end, I mean, two familiar names, Dakota Tweedy and Sage Ennis are probably your two tight ends that you should know about. I will say when Sage Ennis went down against Coastal Carolina, their game plan for the year completely changed. I think that was also the game where Trill Harris got hurt. So they got two of their best defensive players were hurt that game. And I say that because Sage Ennis's run blocking was very missed after he left. And that changed the dynamic for what Tyler Neville was expected to do, because Tyler Neville was meant to be an option in the passing game much more than he was. But because of Sage Ennis' injury, he had to kind of fall back and be that additional run blocker. Because Dakota Tweedy, to be fair, was playing his first full year as tight end, so he wasn't quite there yet. I will say he looks more like a tight end this year, and he was actually my breakout watch to this year. I think this could be a breakout year for Dakota Tweedy. His frame is much bigger. I mean, the guy really focused in on that weight room. He really took advantage of the extra nutrition resources that Virginia had this offseason. So you've seen a lot of growth there for him. And having Sage Ennis back as well will allow him to kind of use those wide receiver skills as being an additional pass catcher as well. So that's really exciting in that room. As far as those wide receiver, I mean, there's a lot of options for Chandler Morris, and a guy who likes to throw to different receivers. It's going to be interesting to see who actually gets those reps. Now, Des Kitchings, we spoke to him today after practice. Before practice, they switched their practice schedule around. He said it's 8 or 9 players he expects to play at wide receiver. And he's just trying to figure out how they're going to dish it out. Right now, Jamal Edrin and Jaden Thomas, 1-2 on one side of the field. And Jamal Edrin, he's such a big human. He'll be interesting to see how they use him. Now, one thing that I thought was incredible, and I'm actually running a feature on it next week, was that Jamal Edrin had to do over 30 credits academically since his arrival, which is quite remarkable. They had to do that between spring and summer. And he was still doing that while balancing training camp and spring practice. And both Kitchings and Elliott both said that he did it with a smile on his face. And I think that's remarkable for a transfer player in this day and age of college football to accept that that's what he needs to do, right? Because he could have chosen another school and not have this, but he chose to come to Virginia and do that. And also it shows that admissions is more flexible this year. It's another example of how things are changing behind the scenes and there's more buy-in around the football program. Obviously, Jaden Thomas is coming from Notre Dame, from playing, you know, in playoffs and understanding what a national program plays and winning. So you have those guys on one side for 1 and 2. Cam Ross is the one that stole all the headlines between everyone saying that he's the offensive MVP, is going to be an option at the return game. They're very excited about Cam Ross and how they're going to utilize him in the slot. And he's over Cam Courtney because Sudarian Harrison is hurt right now, probably going to not be available in that first game. But in the slot also, you have Josiah Abdullah, a freshman, and who's also an option. I've been hearing so much about the freshman between him, Dula Newton Short, and Isaiah Robinson. And those three are expected to take reps. I know we've talked a lot about the transfer new faces, but these high school new faces are also guys that could really contribute for Virginia. I mean, Josiah Abdullah, you saw him in the spring game and the potential he has in that slot. So that slot is very interesting. I'm really curious of how that goes. And then the other side for receiver, I mean, it's two familiar names. Trill Harris, if he's healthy and ready to go. I mean, they missed him last year after Coastal Carolina. I mean, he was their option to stretch the field. This time you have a lot of options to stretch the field between possibly Jamal Edrin, Des Kitching said, Cam Ross. I think the shocking one for me was Eli Wood. And I don't know if it's don't know if it's shocking as much because I've heard people praise him behind the scenes and they call him the glue of the wide receiver room. But at the same time, I was expecting maybe like a DeAndre Green to kind of move into that too deep because, I mean, Adam Mims said that he was one of the guys that made the biggest stride or he was really impressed with his development. But Eli Wood has made plays in fall camp. I've heard he's caught touchdowns. I've heard he has been one of the most consistent receivers. So that's why he's on the two deep. But yeah, it will be interesting to see how many of those receivers do actually make the field. And honestly, it's going to be interesting to see who's the receiving leader at the end of the day. And it could be one that's with more receiving yards and the one with the most receptions towards the end of the year.
Yeah, for sure. I'm kind of interested to see how much Chandler, and we'll get to him in a second, but really does spread the ball around. I just feel like Cam Ross really could be a target monster in kind of the Malik Washington mold, in a sense, at least. So we'll see. I'm interested because I was very excited for Trell Harris last year. Obviously, when he played, he looked good. So I'm hoping he stays upright. Edrin, I think just having, you know, he's 6'3". So, I mean, just having a guy that size as a red zone target is great. And then hopefully Twitty, all the work he's put in really does pay off because that's a guy that really could take advantage in the middle of the field. With that, too, I'm going to kind of blend a topic real quick just to hit on because we talked about that difference with having the blocking tight end back. Obviously, we'll get to the coaching staff a little bit more in a few, but one of the things I was going to hit on was how having a roster like this actually helps open things up for the coaching staff. And I think last year you could see the idea of it, at least at first, with a guy like Say Jens before he got hurt, of being able to bring in, you know, like a two tight set, different personnel that gave them more of an advantage in the running game, and then to be able to open it up from there. So I'm very excited for him to be back. And then for Tweety as well to be up. He's listed the same weight, 245. So I'm sure he's in at least the same ballpark officially as Sage Ennis. So he should be able to hold his own maybe a little bit better if he's called on to block some too. So that should help a lot, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Their offense is built for tight ends. I mean, them not having tight ends, consistent, healthy tight ends the last 2 years have just really hurt them. I mean, so like last year when Sage Ennis got hurt, you were left with an inexperienced tight end room. So obviously Tyler Neville, but they need two. So having them there and then having some people getting more confidence in John Rogers as their number three tight end will certainly help them. And then, like you said, because when you look at Chandler Morris liking to spread the ball, I mean, he's also a good runner. The guy knows football. He's a football guy, veteran guy. I know a lot of people talk about his height compared to Anthony Calandria. But I think what he brings is that experience and having those weapons at his disposal. He's not going to lock down on one receiver. That's not what he's done. So that's also an additional thing for that staff to use.
Yeah, for sure. And again, we'll segue in. We'll kind of do a quick rundown of the quarterbacks. Obviously, Chandler Morris will be the guy probably getting all the headlines. But go ahead, Jackie. What should people be looking forward to there?
I mean, it's kind of like we touched on a little bit. I mean, he's a guy who's a veteran. He's grown up around football because of his dad. He's kind of like that film buff. He's got a lot of respect in that locker room. Kind of took that to heart of saying, like, I'm going to lead this team. Took the initiative on these player-led workouts, made sure he built chemistry around the team. It was really crucial to have those, especially with so many of the additions on the offense and even the summer trying to get those things going. I mean, he said he wasn't as comfortable with the playbook in the spring, but really worked during the summer and getting into the training camp to really get comfortable. And he said he's very comfortable now with the playbook. He's really comfortable with the guys up front. And kind of like what I touched on with Brady Wilson, right? He's engaged in a long-term relationship. It's a different, I mean, he's in his 20s. It's much different when you have that maturity in your quarterback, in your leaders on this team, and having that nucleus between him and Brady Wilson. And I can even throw guys like Mikhail Boley and Noah Josie and Dakota Tweedy. Those guys are your nucleus that either have been in the program for years, when you touch on Dakota and Noah, who can help build that culture. But then you have guys who are football guys like Chandler Morris. And I think his ability to not hone in on a receiver, ability to extend plays with his feet, and then also find the open guy. I mean, he's coming from an air raid offense, so he's able to kind of adjust on the fly there. And I think he's going to be a good weapon for Virginia. I know, again, I saw some people compare him to Anthony Calandria, But the issue that you have there is Anthony Calandra was thrown into a situation where he was too young. I mean, he was not, he knew he was not meant to start that first year, but Tony Muska's injury kind of moved forward a little bit his development. The issue is there were some freshman mistakes that he made. When you look in some plays where like he should have probably not done that, but he made it happen. Like I think the Maryland game one where he probably should have thrown the ball away instead of running off and getting that touchdown. I mean, he got it, but that's probably not what he should have done. Take that away from Chandler Morris, but making plays. I think that's where you have a difference there is that maturity level. He's seen it all. He was at TCU when they went all the way to the national title game, and he won that quarterback battle before he was hurt. There's a reason why he won that quarterback battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I love the fact that he's going to get the ball out on time, and he's going to be able to make those reads. I think I'm really curious to see how much more versatility, and I'm sure it's everything y'all have already said, but just how much more versatility we have in our offense because of that ability to go three, four receivers in a read and actually know that it's going to be on timing because part of that air raid offense background, it's not a lot of people think it's that we're going to bomb the ball downfield for 20 yards. No, it's timing. It's two steps out, 2 seconds out, in and out of your hands. Like, is it quick decisions? If he's going to take off and go and try to scramble, he's going to take off and go and try to scramble. And as an O lineman, that's much easier to block for. Mm-hmm. It's much easier to understand when you know where your quarterback's going to be and you can anticipate it. It makes your life a lot easier. And just, I'm really excited for that to just, and that, to me, that's also the biggest question behind the receiving core. When we were talking about the receivers, it's just like, what does it look like? Are we able to adjust our playbook accordingly so that we can throw a few more wrinkles in there and move some guys around to some unexpected places because we're able to make the progressions now. They're able to make the progressions to get from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 and also not be afraid to check down and make that play. You know, I'm going to be a little bit more blunt about it, but yeah.
Yeah, well, Dragon, that's a good point too. I mean, sometimes for an offense, especially newer offenses, or not to be unfair to them, but maybe some underskilled, I guess is the best way to put it, as we kind of saw more last year at some positions, it's better to have a quarterback who's going to do things a certain way that you can predict for compared to the unpredictability, even if there is some wow factor involved. You know, I don't want to dig deep into that whole subject again, but I was kind of with you, Jackie, on the how they handled Calandria. Unfortunately, you know, just is what it is. I wish the best hope for the good for him, but I think a team that has a quarterback that's two steps out is, you know, going to check down when is necessary, is going to throw the ball away if necessary, can run, but will get down or get out of the way, you know, as opposed to just going for gold on every single play would have helped. And I'm excited to see it this year with this group.
Agreed.
Yeah. I mean, from an offensive lineman's perspective, you know, it doesn't get talked about a lot, but they appreciate that so much because at the end of the day, we don't have to use AC. I'll use Shador, who is up in Cleveland right now, as an example of it. When you hold the ball longer, the O lineman is the one who gets credited with giving up a sack. Is it necessarily their fault if you had the ball for 6, 7, 8 seconds and you reverse out of the pocket? That's hard, and that's demoralizing because, you know, as an O lineman, as a tackle, you're the one who takes that hit, and everyone's like, oh, they're just not blocking for the guy because look what happened in this play where he took off and he made something happen. And that's, you know, I'm not trying to say there's a riff or anything, but it is innately in your head and it's frustrating and it makes things harder, especially if you're in a newer room where you're kind of don't necessarily have that leadership of guys who can kind of talk you back down and help you get through that frustration in a healthy manner. And so having, again, the leadership that we have around the team and then also having a QB who's a little bit more predictable just makes everyone's life a lot better because actually they're more dangerous and they're more unpredictable as a result of it. So.
Yeah. The O-line's actually asking Chandler, like, was that pocket good? How am I doing? Do you have enough time? And there's that communication between them. So that's been something that both Chandler and several O-linemen have said is that they've been communicating with him. Like, how does that look? Do you need something else from us? So that open communication is very good for Virginia.
It's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. It's good stuff, too, to have a guy, like you said, being a coach's son that is experienced on top of that, just more or less student of the game, that can really give you a good feel on what he's saying in that, too. You know, maybe doesn't feel pressured to say, oh, yeah, it was good to some older guys, or doesn't have the experience to know what some different stunts and some different looks he could get would be like, you know, in comparison. So I think it's a good thing. I think everything there is great. With that, we'll switch to the other side of the ball. Maybe we'll try to go a little quicker on this side, starting with the defensive line. So one thing I'd like to note real quick before we go, you know, kind of more of a deeper dive, is that across the line, this is where the most of the ORs are listed in the depth chart, which is wonderful to see, because all of these that are showing are listed as OR for the starter spot. There are a total of 6 different guys who are listed as, I guess you could call it a potential starter with the OR would be the best way to say it. You know, obviously, of course, we'll see how it lines up. Game one, it's probably going to go the way the column falls. But a lot of positional depth here that we are not accustomed to having under Coach Elliott. And something that, you know, he hit on a little bit yesterday about how this will really take things off of the coaches. Again, kind of meshing this in. Because he now has the depth that he can limit some guys' snaps as opposed to trying to get them, you know, 60 to 65 plays a game. A guy like Jameer Carter, for example, who gave everything he had last year, but obviously that takes its toll having to play so much. Now being able to limit these guys maybe to roughly 30-ish snaps or, you know, more if the game calls for it, but not having to really exert themselves could really help a lot. Jackie, you want to give us maybe a quick rundown on some of these guys?
Yeah, sure. Like you kind of touched on it, just keeping guys fresh. Jameer Carter, actually, that nose tackle position is the only one without the OR. So it's Jameer Carter and Anthony Britton. That's the only time that you don't see an OR. I mean, defensive end Fisher Kamik or Kazim Moore, 2 transfers. Fisher Kamik came from UNLV. He was a guy that I was very excited about when they picked up from the transfer portal, a guy who can get to the quarterback. He's going to be an intriguing player, seeing him off the edge. On the other side of defensive tackle, you have Jason Hammond or Hunter Osborne or Jacob Holmes. Hunter Osborne was hurt a little bit towards camp, but he's coming from University of Alabama. And I think he's going to be one that contributes a little bit during the season. Jacob Holmes, I mentioned, I think he's a passing down, third down option for Virginia. He can get to the quarterback. I think he had 3.5 sacks last year for his previous team. So he's definitely one that you can eye on that. And I mentioned Daniel Rickert a little bit earlier, how he was a guy who's kind of surprised me on how he moved up. Him and Mitchell Milton are on that bandit position. And Billy Kadelka is also there. Kudos to him. A former lacrosse player coming in preferred walk-on. And I guess there's no walk-ons anymore because of the new rules. But yeah, I mean, he's done a good job with his height. And one thing I think when you look at all of this is how many guys are either close to 300 pounds or at 300 pounds. So there are big guys who move really well. So that's the difference in the D-line from last year to this year.
Yeah, for sure. Dragon, what do you think? I know you're offensive, defensive, whatever. Lineman is more your speed, man. What do you think?
I'm 6'6", 335 pounds. Yes, I know my fellow big men like to hear how they think and what it's like to be down there. Yeah, I love the versatility. I love the size. I love the strength that we're going to be able to show. But like both of y'all touched on, I think the biggest thing is being able to limit snaps and rotate guys up front. That's the way football's played now. You look at any team that's had success at any level, you're rotating those guys up front now to get some more situational things so that your edge rusher is fresh on that third down when you need that play. And it's something that Virginia hasn't been able to do very much of. And I think it's just having that opportunity now just changes the game so much. And also having just, at the end of the day, mass is mass. And it's hard when you're 270 and you're going up against a guard who's 345 and, you know, you're trying to hold that gap. It's just physics at some point. So being able to nullify some of that, it's just going to make a big difference and let those linebackers scrape and let them find some gaps to fire into and hopefully make some plays in the backfield.
Yeah, for sure. We'll kind of segue from there into what is probably the most familiar position group. So if you've seen the team play the last couple of years, you'll recognize more of these names with our linebackers. Now, obviously, Cam Robinson is going to miss a little bit of time. Coach Elliott said yesterday that things are going well for him. So it's probably down. I don't want to put words in his mouth, you know, but it's closer as far compared to being farther away for him coming back. So we'll all be excited for that. But Jackie, what do we have to look for this week?
I mean, it's like you said, familiar names. I mean, James Jackson is back for another year. He got another year of eligibility. So you got a veteran with him. And you have a veteran in Trey McDonald, too, who had a great second half of the season last year. I mean, he was a guy that you could see the growth that he had because James obviously got hurt a little bit last year. And even Cam missed the game and he was playing hurt. I mean, he was a warrior last year playing hurt through everything he had to go through. Trey McDonald came and repped and he was showing his potential and how much growth he had last year. And then you throw Landon Danley, who maybe some people aren't as familiar with him. He's a guy who learned playing safety, came in and switched to linebacker. And he was the first year rookie player of the year for special teams last year. So he contributed a lot on special teams. And now he's going to start contributing more on defense. And he's very athletic. He's gained a little bit of weight. And I think he's going to be one guy that probably is another one to watch out for breakout year. Is kind of one of those guys to watch out a little bit more as the future of the program. And then Maddox Marcellus is a guy who came from the portal. So you have options at linebacker. I know people were little skittish when I reported on Cam Robinson's injury that he was going to miss a few games. But this is the one position that I actually think they are okay because they have experience depth. The thing that the boogeyman that Virginia didn't have last year, they have this year in that position.
Yeah, for sure. Then last group we'll go to, just to keep things moving kind of quicker, are defensive backs. To me, honestly, this is kind of a group that I think is maybe being a little underappreciated as far as I think the difference we're going to see on the field for, you know, production-wise, you know, what they're able to limit, maybe some plays they're able to make on top of that, you know, away from just keeping the offense under wraps. But this is a group to me that one thing is very noticeable is they brought in a ton of length. Even going through the group, adding Antonio Clary back in, the only person listed under 6 feet is Donovan Platt. That'll be seeing time. Fun fact on Platt, too, that I just want to throw in there. He actually had an interception last year off Chandler Morris, picked him off in their game against each other. So that was kind of cool. I'm sure that makes for some fun times in practice, you know, talking back and forth. But, Jackie, if we could just go down the corners and safeties, everything we're going to be seeing, some of these new faces, some good potential, too, with these new faces.
Yeah, so at corner, that was the battle that we all were kind of anticipating because we didn't know because they were hurt and we didn't know who was playing. Even like watching the practice, we didn't see who was kind of rotating with the ones apart from Jordan Robinson. And him I really like because he played a lot of football and he gives you some size on the boundary. So he's one that's very interesting to me. And I think he was also one of the underrated ones coming from the portal and the staff really like his playmaking ability. Emmanuel Carnley transferred in from Miami in the spring. And he's very fluid. He's very physical. He's got good instincts. So he was kind of one that I kind of expected to be one of the starters. And you mentioned Donovan Platt coming from Army. He's one that Virginia is now looking into kind of rotating in. They really want guys fresh. I mean, Coach John Rudzinski is saying, I want guys to be fresh at the end of the game. So you're going to see more of those moving pieces. Josiah Persinger is a freshman. He was the highest rated recruit in last year's class. He was upgraded to a 4-star in 24/7 Sports after signing day. He's been impressing a lot of Virginia staff, and he's one that I can see seeing playing time as well. And then at safety, at spur nickel, you have Jason Prevard. He's been someone that played in the spring and played there this training camp. Corey Cosner, another freshman, has been impressing the staff. I mean, Elliott, Cox, Rudzinski, everyone is saying that he has potential to play this year, either that nickel or spur position. At safety, we mentioned Ethan Minter. Christian Charles is that Swiss Army knife of the secondary. He can play in that free safety role. He can play at that spur position, nickel position, and he can even play corner if he's needed. So I do like the potential of Christian Charles. They couldn't really experiment with him because he was hurt with a hamstring issue during training camp. So they couldn't really see that, but that's something just to keep note of Christian Charles transferring in from Tennessee. And then the last one is strong safety is Devin Neal and DeMarcus Crosby are your 1 and 2. Devin Neal's coming in from Louisville. He was an all ACC player 2 years ago. So he obviously knows the ACC. I mean, he played against Virginia. So he understands the ACC in that competition. DeMarcus Crosby is also a very physical safety. So I'm interested to see how much rotations they do end up doing in that secondary because there are definitely some options there.
Yeah, for sure. I think even just fun fact again with Neal, I believe it was his game against Virginia in 2023 that he actually set a career high in tackles. So he's got some good familiarity. I guess some good vibes from at least him personally, maybe not so much with the uniform, but some good things going there. Dragon, what do you think about the group? What have you seen or heard that you're kind of thinking about? Looking good, looking bad? What do you think?
I love the size. I mean, that's, again, kind of I've thought about it a couple of times tonight about trends in football as a whole, and we're just seeing larger receivers tend to be more of the thing now. We're just seeing more of these basketball player looking athletes essentially who are just massive running around on the edges, and you have to find a way to combat that. And it means having DBs who are 6 foot tall and can run like gazelles. I think like we're seeing that in the Hoos, you know, secondary, which is great. And then again, the depth, hopefully not only having fresh legs at the end of the game is beneficial, but also we can just do more stuff. I think Rudd can get a little bit more aggressive in spots where that's something that I've been critical of in previous seasons, but also understanding when you only have essentially one deep, it's hard to blitz. It's hard to bring pressure. You have to kind of play a shell coverage and just hope for the best. And I think now, hopefully everyone stays on their feet, that he can start to mix in some of that a little bit more. And because when we saw that last season and when he was able to kind of dial it up a little bit, I thought the defense played well. We saw it in spats, especially in the early part of the season, where they were able to hold their own and even start to, you know, force some turnovers. But, you know, as the season wore on and suddenly that two deep became a one and a half deep to a one deep, basically, you know, if we were really talking about it, that just wasn't an option anymore. And at this level, the ACC, if you can't find a way to bring pressure from your secondary in the right time, and you allow guys to just sit back there, let any quarterback to sit back there, they're going to pick you apart. And, you know, we saw that, unfortunately. That's kind of what it comes down to.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, you know, just having that depth that you can rotate guys in so they're not worn out is going to be huge. I guess since we've gone through the entire offensive defensive side, we'll go into what has probably been the hottest topic of the year. For better or worse, fair or not, I think everyone is curious about the coaching staff. So, I mean, just to be completely honest with ourselves, the last couple of years have not really gone the way we probably all hoped they would as far as results on field go. And that, you know, that can lead to some tough conversations. That these things happen. I mean, just being true about it. So with that, though, I will say, as far as the staff goes, starting from the beginning, which would be recruiting, Raz, right? As far as on field, you got to get the players first. I think that this year they have done a good job when being on what I'm going to describe, at least in the best way I can, as being a level playing field with their competition. So as far as having that NIL backing now, as far as having the op center, you know, a place that they could actually physically take guys that they were scouting and recruiting to go into, to see, to get to know what they're going to be part of. I think it's done well for them this first year of that, having all this put together. I'm excited to see what they can do with it, but obviously it is something that's on everyone's mind. One thing with it, and, you know, even truthfully, I mean, to give him credit, Coach Elliott has also kind of acknowledged this in a way. One big thing he said, you know, the team's motto this year is going to be no excuses. So, realistically, guys, I just want to know what you think as far as him saying that as a fan watching, right? Like, what should we realistically take no excuses to mean? Dragon, I'll let you start this one if you like.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone knows what's at stake this year. This is an historic investment in this football program on the field. And I understand NIL is still new, but just in general, the investment that we've seen on the field, we've never seen before. And I'm not sure any of us 12 months ago, if we had this conversation, thought that Virginia Athletics had an appetite for it. I know I didn't. I've been around this program for 30 plus years at this point. There are no excuses. The football facility is here. The money is there for the NIL. They've brought in, we've just spent 54 minutes talking about the upgrades across the field of the talent position. They've done all the things. So many of us who have sat here on these type of podcasts and on these forums have advocated for or said, well, if we had this, if we had that, those boxes have been ticked. At this point, you know, it's why you don't see me commenting on the forum at this point anymore. Like, there's nothing else to be said. Kick the ball off, coach them up, play the game. And there's no excuses. Like, there isn't. That's why I kind of look at it. It's the staff knows what's at stake here. They know what happens if they don't get it right. The players know what happens if it doesn't get it right. This is, again, the world we live in now in college sports and college football. They've given you everything you can possibly ask for. The schedule couldn't set up any better for any program in the country. You know, yes, there are a lot of question marks about who we're playing in terms of what they're going to bring. They're in very similar situations as to what Virginia's in. But, yeah, it's make or break. Kick it off on Saturday. Let's go out there and see where it goes. But It's not going to be because of a lack of anything. It's just either you execute or you don't at this point.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I agree with all that. To me, I kind of took it as no excuses doesn't necessarily mean, well, no excuses, we can't go undefeated. It's no excuses, we're going to put our best foot forward. Everybody here is bought in. You know, staff, players, everybody included is going to, when they show in, you know, they're going to clock in, they're going to get to work, they're going to work until the bell, they're going to play till the whistle. That's kind of the way I took it. I expect for better or for worse, because there's so many variables in a season. You can't control what's going to happen. Injury-wise, personnel-wise, just bad luck. I mean, things happen, right? To anything, especially in football, in a sport where you have so many guys on the field at the same time, just things happen. So to me, I kind of took it as meaning no excuses. We're going to be the best version of Virginia football that we can be, and we'll see where that takes us. Jackie, of course, you're a little closer to the situation. What's kind of been your vibe, or I guess the vibe around on what he's meaning when he's saying that?
I mean, I agree with what both of you have said. I mean, when he says no excuses, I mean, during his post-practice kind of speeches, he talks about focusing, talking about not beating themselves. Those are the things. Those are the no excuses. The don't muff the punt. Don't drop the pass. Don't miss that tackle. No false starts. No pre-snap penalties. Those are the things there, right? Mental discipline. Because last year and the year before, close games should have gone some of UVA's way if it wasn't for those mental lapses and mental errors. They were close in several games in the fourth quarter. They allowed teams to come back that they shouldn't have allowed to come back. Yep. Those are the things when they say no excuses. It's that mental fortitude that they lacked in some games last year. So that's when they say about no excuses. Like, there's certain things in football is going to happen. Injuries are going to happen. But they built competitive depth. So there you go. You can't have no excuses there. So there's a lot of things when he says that. They're not expecting to go, you know, they're going to go and fight for a national championship. Any coach who says otherwise is lying to you. They're wanting to do the best and win the top titles in the country in their sport. But what they're saying is, at the end of the season, did we do the best that we can? And how many excuses did we give for our bad performances? I think that's the key there. They don't want that. They want to make sure that they play. And they're not the reason why they lost. It's because the other team made the plays and not UVA missing those plays.
I love that. Yeah. To me, yeah. I mean, I think that's the beauty of sports is sometimes it just doesn't go your way and that's okay. But the key to exactly what you just nailed is, did you prepare? Did you do everything you could? Did you make sure you didn't do the silly things that cost you? And if you check those boxes, then whatever happens, happens. So be it. If that means that you drop a game, sometimes other teams just flat out better, and that happens. That's life. But, you know, we don't have to say that as fans, but it's just the truth. But the reality of it is, like you said, did that happen because we had seven penalties? You know, that's something different, and that's where the accountability and the no excuses really takes it. Check all the boxes, take care of yourself, take care of what you can control, and then let the chips fall as they may. Get out there and go.
Yeah, for sure. So with that too, one of our other, I mean, like I said, it's been a main topic all offseason, right? Everybody's discussing this. So one of our other main questions we're kind of seeing is, what are we expecting to see out of Elliott this year that as a fan we are happy with, if that makes sense? Like reasonable expectation. You know, a lot of people, they want win and loss numbers on this. And we talked about this before the show started. I'm not, and I know you guys kind of aren't either, people that want to put a number to it to say, oh, well, if he gets this many wins, we should think this way. And if he gets this many, we should think that way. I don't really like that approach just because of all the variables in it. To me, what I want to see is execution of the system that he's kind of talked about wanting to have the entire time he's been here. You know, like I said early in the show, establishing the run, branching your playbook out from there, not making mistakes, not beating yourself on the field, you know, limiting turnovers, limiting flags, those types of things, just doing your best. Like you said, Dragon, sometimes the other team is just better, and that's going to be a fact that we might have to deal with at some point. But I mean, to me, like, there's things you can see that don't necessarily have to be wins or losses that show the growth in the right direction. But what do you think from there, Dragon? I mean, what are you looking for?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, especially as a resident gambling guy on LRA, to not think of numbers. So, you know, the Vegas line's been sitting at 6.5 all year, basically since springtime. I love the over on that. I think there's no reason, you know, I think if you had the benchmark and you had to put a number on it, I would say seven's a bare minimum expectation, just given everything that's out there. And, you know, hopefully it's more than that. That said, though, to your point, there are a lot of variables and a lot of ways you can get to that seven, or a lot of ways you can get to eight. There's a lot of ways that maybe five looks. I don't know. Chandler goes out and his leg falls off midway through the Florida State game. Things happen sometimes.
Don't put that on the universe.
Yeah, I know, right? I felt a little tingly just even even putting that out there. That's why I try to make it as absurd of an injury as possible. But, yeah, you know, I think seven's the magical number, but I think how we get to that seven is going to be the key factor. And I'm not really sure, you know, how that looks or what that looks like. But that's, you know, like you said, like, is it seven and did we throw five of those away because of who knows what? Is it seven, but, you know, maybe one game's in a monsoon and one game is, you know, you got to take all that. Nothing happens in a vacuum. So, you know, I think it's going to be what it looks like. And we'll know, we'll all know, everyone will know at the end of the season what feels right and what doesn't feel right. But did we earn them, or did we give some away?
Yeah, for sure. Jackie, any other thoughts on that?
I mean, I think you both kind of touched on everything. Like I said, I don't really like putting a number of wins. I think bowl game is probably the minimum, just that it's just getting to a bowl game. I think is what is crucial, because this program has not been to a bowl game in a while. I think it's 2019. The Orange Bowl against Florida was the last time, because obviously the COVID one was canceled in Boston. So I think that, but I think it's just showing progress in a lot of the things that they've been doing that was wrong last year and the year before, closing those close wins, not beating themselves, showing discipline on the field. I think for recruiting, especially showing development in the players that you brought in the high school level. So you're seeing that nucleus of Dakota Tweedy, Xavier Brown, Mikhail Boley, that first Tony Elliott class, and even showing like the in-state players like Josiah Persinger and, I know, Corey Costner from the Maryland area, but those guys and their contribution and how you develop those players will have, it will have, will have impact on recruiting. So I'm looking at that lens. If you show development in players, you will bring other talent, because you need to win on the field and show that what you can do with talent in order to get those recruits interested in you. So that's what I'm looking at. And I think that's important for Elliott this season.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say it's the same thing even for the portal guys as well, because, you know, especially given the makeup of the roster, it's about 50-50 right now, upperclassmen and lower class. Like, transfers are going to happen regardless. This team can win 10 games next year or this year, and there will be transfers. But can we show that we can plug and play a quarterback? Can they show that, you know, you can plug and play these different positions and get these guys to the next level within their own right? Same thing. So it's if that bears itself out, like, it sets them up. I know I saw some people worry about, like, oh my goodness, there are a lot of seniors on a two-dip. So what happens next year? You know, I don't – next year will take care of itself when we get there. Let's just at least get through Coastal first. But the biggest part of that, like, just exactly what you said, Jackie, is, like, can we show that we can develop our in-state guys and develop our guys who came in as first years, and then can they also show that they can plug and play players and get them to show something special or elevate their game to that next level as well?
Yeah, for sure. So last thing we'll do, Dragon, you mentioned the Coastal game. We'll start there, kind of do that quick. We're also going to do just a quick, you know, thoughts on how that game might go with a full season prediction. Dragon, as our gambling guy who looks more into these types of things, I kind of wanted you to maybe take the way on this for the Coastal game as far as what we should expect. How much have you done a lot of digging yet? Or
I've done some digging. Tomorrow's usually my big dive deep day, and I could hold it back a little bit. But last I saw, we're still sitting at about a 12.5-point spread, 13-point spread, I believe it is right now, is what I'm seeing, depending on how you shop it. I like that cover. Over-unders this early in the season are really sketchy. I believe I've seen it shopping around at 56 total points. That feels a little bit high just because I don't know. There's too many unknowns around both squads right now. Coastal's rolling out a new offense. Nothing in Tony Elliott's history tells me that he's one to run the score up, you know, necessarily. Especially, it's pretty obvious he's going to rotate bodies. And so, you know, I don't know that their offense is capable of getting 50 plus points on their own or 40 plus points on their own if the defense holds its serve. You know, I don't know. So I would avoid that as of right now. I may change my mind if I dig into it. Tune in on Friday for that. That's a tease for you. But yeah, I would say I'd like the Hoos to cover. I like the Hoos to come out strong. I love what happened last year. I think we're going to see another heavy dose of what we saw last year where I want to say, correct me if I'm wrong, it was close to 200. It was by far the best game on the ground. It was 200 some yards, almost 300 some yards on the ground, I want to say.
When 384 yards.
Yeah, exactly. I thought it was something absurd like that, but yeah, I expect another heavy dose of that, especially if you want to keep that offense, the air raid off the field. The best way to neutralize it is to just grind their defense into the ground. And so we just spent half an hour talking about how much improvement we've seen on the O-line and the depth they have there and the fact that there are potentially four running backs who are all studs who could all potentially go for a 100-yard game if given the reps and the opportunity. Yeah, I hope, you know, I want to see Chandler tossed around a little bit. I would love to see 6-7 guys for multiple receptions. I think something like that would be great to see just to, you know, I don't need them to have gaudy numbers because I don't want to get into a shootout with Coastal, but I like to see his ability to be able to spread the ball around like we talked about. But, you know, to me, the most important stat is going to be what does that rushing stat look like at the end of the day? Are we going into the fourth quarter and we're talking about seeing a team that's run for 200 plus yards already, 300 yards maybe going into the fourth? Then it's going to be a good day. If we're going into the fourth quarter and the Hoos are nipping around 100, 125 maybe yards, could get a little dicey. And so that's what I'm curious to see.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'll hold my picks for the blog posting you do Friday. So I'll join in there in the comments for anybody that wants to check that out. Dragon has a very good hit rate, so it's well worth checking if you're into that type of thing. Or if you're just kind of, you know, like me and just like to look at it, that's fun too, either way.
All the games across the board.
yeah, for sure. Now, I will say, though, that in that game, the over 300 rushing yards came on 58 total rushing attempts. Now, obviously, a couple of those with Calandria, you know, maybe it was him scrambling a little here or there. But there was a very concerted effort. And I'm going to be honest, I thought in that game specifically, even more so compared to the rest of the season, that we were going to prove that we were, you know, the superior team as far as being bigger, being stronger, not trying to diminish Coastal by any means, but being the ACC team on the field, you know, a level up in competition. So I am personally hoping to see kind of the same thing with Saturday's game. I know everybody wants to see, you know, the shiny new toys and new team, see what we can do, what they can put up. But for me, I think a dress rehearsal game almost where, you know, Chandler gets out there, he spreads the ball around, we get a nice little lead. They kind of just pound them and pound them and pound them over again from there. Get out there, no injuries, no more issue than what's already going on. And not really have shown much on film either for the big matchup the next week would be great. Jackie, what are you kind of thinking and looking for this first game?
Yeah, kind of with you, just take care of business, get guys off the field, and also just see what works on game day. See what kind of combinations you can work on, because I'm interested in the packages when it comes to the secondary, what packages look like for certain situations, who's going to be on the field for certain situations there on third down. I that's what I'm curious about. The key matchup for me, because you're dealing with an air raid offense, is how is that secondary, who has not played together very much this training camp because of injuries and such, how's the communication in the back? Because obviously they haven't been able to play on the field very much. I mean, Carnley was out for a bit. Jordan Robinson was in to play with him, and Josiah Pergesicker played more there. So that's my main concern for this game. Is that's why I think they're going to cover. I just don't know if it's going to be a huge difference here, or if they're going to go over on the 56 points, because I mean, that's the danger there when you're getting a new secondary. The only thing I can say is that because of the D-line and the experience of the linebacker, you're not going to have that much of an issue because you can pressure the quarterback. But yeah, that's the matchup that I'm curious about, because this whole offseason I've been hearing about how Virginia needs to reinforce the cornerback position in the secondary. Well, here it is. I want to see what they were able to do this offseason, because that could make or break the rest of the season, how we kind of look and what we kind of expect from our predictions.
Yeah, 100% agree. It's going to be exciting. I'm excited for football around Virginia football. And, you know, having this feeling of optimism is nice this year. You know, obviously I've been a fan for my entire life. So I go into every year thinking we're going to a bowl and we're going to do this and do that. And truthfully, I've been disappointed more often than not. I mean, just being honest, but it's always fun. This year feels different to me. Yeah. Like it feels like there's actually, like you said, Dragon, I mean, a lot of us didn't really know how Virginia felt about stepping up to the level maybe necessary to compete in the biggest sport of all at this level. To see, you know, some of that really coming to fruition, to see, you know, with that, the coaches using it in what my opinion, again, just a wise way, getting guys that are experienced, playable for sure, all over the place. I know we've gone a little long, so we'll go ahead and wrap up. The last thing I'd like to do is just quick season predictions. I'll go first on this, just a quick my thought on this. I honestly see potential for a 9-3 season. I'm going to play it safe and I'm going to go 8-4 this year. And I'm going to be just completely honest. My absolute dream at this point is to play in the Pop-Tart Bowl. I could not care less about the college football playoff when it comes to Virginia football. My goal is to be in Florida for this game and to see us send a live mascot into a toaster and then eat him afterwards. And then hopefully, you know, I joke about this, but for real, the one thing if I could get from Locker Room Access is to be able to actually make a toaster in the functioning toaster trophy. Like my life would be complete. Like that to me, that whole game, the whole experience is what college football should be. So that's my like ride or die for the season is if we can get there, like my life is made as far as football goes. What do you guys think though? Jackie, what are you thinking?
I'm going with 7 wins. I think that's where I am right now. I'm actually doing a game by game prediction on Friday on Wahoo's 24/7. I think that when I look at this schedule, I still have a couple of question marks in some of the other ACC teams. Like I've hated preseason rankings this year because I'm like, I don't know how you know what X, Y, and Z have because they don't even know what X, Y. I mean, can you tell me if Florida State's going to be good this year? Cause I mean, last year you guys were saying that they were going to be good. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I saw Castellanos play at Boston College. I mean, I don't know if he's going to be good at FSU. I mean, they're playing Alabama the first week. I mean, I just don't know, right? I think there's a couple upset watches I have. I think the FSU game is one I have an upset watch. I think North Carolina is one I have an upset. I think at Louisville, I mean, they've been close. So I think depends on what we see with Virginia in the first couple of games. But 7 games seems realistic to me. I think that was one where I was looking at some of the teams. I think that is the realistic expectations for UVA. I mean, I could see more, I can see less, but I'm going with 7.
What you got?
Yeah. I'm with you 100% there, Jackie. I've looked at this up and down and I'm prepping similar my game by game. And I feel like I've changed my answer daily, if not hourly, depending on when I look at the schedule, for this exact reasons. I don't know if Florida State's good or bad again. I don't know. I don't know what UNC is. I don't know, you know, there are several games like that. NC State, for that matter, is hard to even predict, and that's a tough one on the road in week 2. My number is 7. I do think 7 is a very responsible and reasonable one. I could see it blowing up to 8 or 9 if they kind of come out the gate hot and take care of business, if the Hoos come out and, you know, for going into Florida State, we were talking about a 1-2-3-4-0 team. That could be very different. You know, that's a very different outlook on the rest of the season, but I don't know. It can go either way. I think 7 wins is the number. I'm with Josh. I want to see. I think the realistic prediction is they end up in the Tony the Tiger Bowl down in El Paso I think it's New Year's Eve or the 29th or something like that of December. That's one of our bowl games for the ACC slotted in. I think that's a realistic expectation. It would put them, you know, upper mid-level, the ACC kind of bowl game tiers or whatever is left of that kind of thing. I would love that. I think a bowl game has to happen. I would love to see a bowl game that's not in a baseball stadium or played in the Northeast. If I'm being very honest, I don't want to go back to Boston or Annapolis or New York City.
I just don't
want
a Christmas one. That's all my thing. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. Like I've missed several the last few we've been to, you know, outside the Orange Bowl because of that exact reason. I don't want to go to Annapolis. That was even when I lived in DC. And I like Annapolis, but yeah. You know, I would gladly go to El Paso and have a couple beers with the boys. But yeah, I think that 7 win is the most I'm willing to give right now. And then check back with me on October 4th as we go to Louisville. I mean, there's a world they're 5-0 going into that game. There's a world that they might be 2-3 going into that game. It's just hard to tell right now. And I hate to say that, but and it has as much to do with me not knowing what is on the other side of the ball as much as I, more than anything else.
Yeah, completely fair. And honestly, the intrigue is what makes it all the more exciting, right? Like, this gives us real reason to tune in this year. That kind of wraps up everything we had for the night. I'd like to thank everybody for coming on. Dragon, of course, always a pleasure. Jackie, thanks for taking the time to join us tonight as a special guest. For anybody, you know, checking us out here, I will say, to be completely honest, I do think that Kevin, who's got next, is the best coverage as far as basketball goes. But Jackie is second to none when it comes to football. So if this is more your thing, feel free, please check out Wahoo's 24/7. She does an excellent job over there.
I use her content all the time. I honestly love it. So, yeah. Yes.
Well, thanks for having me on. I've been dying to come on the show. So I appreciate you guys having me on today and just talking about football. And I'm just, you know, after covering training camp for all those weeks, I just want to see them play. Like, yeah. There's so many what ifs and how this is going to look. I'm like, I just want to see it.
Yeah.
Yes. Agreed. 100%. But awesome. All right. Well, that wraps up our show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Go Hoos.
Go Hoos.